Our friend Joe Camargo from Phoenix Financial is joining us to chat about this really unprecedented financial crisis that we're facing, Joe, as a result of the coronavirus pandemic and kind of your insight into what is happening and what you think will happen and what folks should do about it.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me on the show. I very much appreciate it.
It's great to talk to you again. It's too bad it's under these circumstances, certainly.
Yeah, certainly unprecedented. Certainly unprecedented. And you know, one of the things that if I can lead into your question, one of the things that we spoke to previously involved what I thought was an overvalued market. Certainly what we're seeing right now is not something that one could have foreseen. It's what one calls a black swan event. The crisis that we had in 2008-2009, many refer to as a black swan. This certainly, I think, qualifies as one. But in the short analysis, I think that it was something that clearly, with the Dow at 29.5 just 3 weeks ago, a little over 3 weeks ago, in my mind, that lofty number was not justified given the macroeconomic numbers that we had been seeing over the past 6 to 9 months. So it's not surprising that the markets have fallen. What is surprising is the violent and swift move that we've seen in just, we call it 12 trading days, certainly unprecedented.
I've heard folks say that really it has nothing to do with the pandemic at all. It was just something that was waiting to happen, and this was kind of the trigger.
I agree. You know, it's funny. I had that very same argument with someone not too long ago, and I remember the first week that we were seeing the sell-off, the first week the Dow lost roughly 4,400 points. And I wrote to someone, I wrote to several individuals at the time telling them that this had absolutely nothing to do with the virus, that it was a trigger. And at the time, I think we had maybe 14 reported cases in the U.S., so that certainly didn't correlate with a 4,000-point drop. Mm. But, you know, as I frequently tell people, the market does not need an excuse to sell. And if the larger institutions had already made their money, those are typically the institutions that lock in their gains and get out. And if enough of those follow suit, then that creates a domino effect, and, you know, the average Joe investor will follow suit. But by then, typically, and this is, I think, what we saw, we had a 4,000, 5,000-point drop, and then the individual investor hopped in, and that just exacerbated things. And we've seen the crescendo of selling since then. So to your point, I agree. I think initially people were selling based on fear, based on an overvaluation. I think now what you're seeing, though, is selling that's based in part on macroeconomic indicators that we're starting to see filter in that do justify selling. For example, this morning, the initial jobless claims number, which is put out every Thursday morning by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that is a metric that tracks essentially new layoffs for the previous week. That's a number that's been trending downward really since the 2009 financial crisis, and we've sat well under 300,000 for about 40 years. Last week's numbers came in at 211,000. This week's number, which is as of last Saturday, came in at 281,000, which is the largest spike that we've seen in years. And in my professional opinion, it's a number that we're going to continue to see a deterioration of. I think we're going to continue to see a spike given that restaurants are closing and bars are closing and small businesses are closing. That is really the spine of the U.S. job force. And when they are struggling, this is typically what you see, is a spike in unemployment.
Do you feel that the government attempts to kind of resuscitate the economy that are being discussed now will have any positive impact in the future?
In the future, yes. Short term, I don't think it's going to have any effect. Mm-hmm. Those sort of measures are done to calm the general public. They're done for public perception. They're done to restore confidence. But right now, there's absolutely no confidence whatsoever. I mean, people just are not feeling good. So the measures that the Fed took last week in lowering interest rates to zero, which is essentially what we call ZIRP, or zero interest rate policy, it's an attempt to restore confidence and to propel spending. The $700 billion in agency and government-backed securities that the government that the government said that it would purchase, that's done to restore liquidity into the banking sector, into the financial sector. And again, it's meant to promote spending and lending, but that had little to no impact last week. Matter of fact, I think quite the opposite. Folks like myself see that as a last-ditch measure on the part of the government, on the part of the Fed, to create some stability. And instead, I think folks took it the other way and said, oh, my God, things are really bad. Mm. And the selling really just intensified. Mm-hmm. What we've seen today and the day prior in which we're talking about stimulus measures and, you know, $1,000 checks, et cetera. If I'm the average individual blue-collar worker that is living paycheck to paycheck, I don't think that a $1,000 check is really going to have much of an impact. It's nice. It's certainly a welcome attempt, don't get me wrong, but short-term, I don't think it's going to have much of an impact mm-hmm. on the overall psyche of the consumer, the average citizen. Longer-term, I think it'll help stabilize things, but I don't think that it's going to have much of an impact going into the second quarter, the spring months.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the question the average investor is asking now is, do I hold pat? Do I, sell and cut my losses? Or is it basically too late and just let it go?
Oh, boy. I mean, that really depends on what you're holding.
Yeah.
And when you purchased it, for example, right? Because if let's say that there's a saying in the market within the profession that, it goes a little bit like this. The market takes the stairs up and then takes the elevator down. And if you can follow that analogy, that's exactly what we've seen in just 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, we've seen the equity markets, essentially go back to valuations dating to 2017, essentially. Mm. Those are the price levels that we're looking at. So if you had purchased an equity index, let's say back then, you're right now, and you had held it, you're back to even. So you've given up an enormous amount of gains,
mm-hmm.
But you're not necessarily negative. Right, because your cost basis is exactly where it was. If you were someone that purchased at the height of the markets, say a month ago, you're looking at a massive unrealized loss. And there are ways to, I mean, obviously there's nothing you can do in terms of that unrealized P&L. But there are sectors that you really ought to be in. Legally, I'm not allowed to give investment advice, mm-hmm. but there are some very, very obvious things, I think, in my estimation, that you should be looking at to help buffer your portfolio if it was highly equity-oriented. For example, if you look at oil, oil is at a multi-decade low. WTI, I believe, is trading right around $20 a barrel. That's insane. The airline industry, the travel and leisure industry, if you look at Boeing, for example, if you look at Carnival Cruise Lines, two publicly traded companies that are considered best of class in their respective industries, have been crushed. They've lost roughly 80% of their value.
Mm.
So, again, I go back to the correlation between the selling that we're seeing and the justification behind it. The selling that we're seeing is based almost right now, anyway, entirely on what-ifs, not actual what-has. And so, if Boeing or Carnival or any major publicly traded company were to come out tomorrow with their earnings reports and their revenue guidance and their actual bottom and top line numbers reflected the selling, then fine, that's one thing. But I don't think that's the case. I think what's happening, it clearly is panic selling, and I think that if you're an equity investor, those are the sort of sectors that you ought to be looking at because, you know, in my estimation, it's not warranted, this sort of selling. I don't remember if it was Peter Lynch or Warren Buffett that said that, you know, buy when there's blood in the streets. And it's a very, very difficult thing to do because, you know, you have that fear and greed complex kick in where you have a situation where, oh my God, we're down 11,000 points. What if we drop another 11,000? So those are the emotions that kick in when you have to be incredibly, incredibly cold-blooded and business-oriented in terms of the sectors that you're looking at. Yeah. And it's a difficult thing for investors to do, to ignore what's happening. And one, not just to go long, right, essentially, which is an industry term in which you're adding a position, whether it's Boeing, whether it's an index, but you also, and these are the sort of things that I teach, is you need to understand how to protect your portfolio when it's at an all-time high, when markets when the markets are at an all-time high, that's when you should be looking to make changes and protect it. Not, and this is very, you know, much easier said than done.
Yeah.
But not after we've cratered. And so, go ahead, sorry.
And how do you do that, Joe? How do you, what should folks have done when the market was high to protect their portfolio?
Okay, so there are a number of things that you ought to be doing. If you're in stock positions, you should be talking to your advisors about hedging your positions, whether they're covered calls or protective puts. These are defensive strategies. They're designed to protect your stock position should the stock drop or should we go through a meltdown, which is what we're seeing right now. The other thing that you ought to be doing, and even before then, is when you're taking on a position, whether it's a stock position, a equity position, an index, whatever the position may be, you should always be going in with an expected entry point and exit point.
Okay.
If one understands historical returns, and you understand that historical returns are anywhere from 8 to 12% depending on your allocation mix, and a month later or a year later you're up 20%, 50%, those are the conversations that you need to have with yourself or with your advisor. And, you know, understand, oh my God, look, relative to historical numbers, I am three times above that. Shouldn't I be locking in these gains? And the answer should always be yes.
Okay.
There's a saying in the market, which or within the profession, which is bulls and bears make money, pigs get slaughtered. And it's a very, you know, it's a bit crude, but it's true in the sense that whether you're optimistic, a bull, or pessimistic, a bear, there are always ways in which to make money in the markets. You can make money in the markets, whether it's rising, falling, if it's trading laterally. But one thing that's almost guaranteed to cost you money is greed. You know, as I alluded to a few minutes ago, fear and greed are variables that impact your psyche when making investment decisions.
Yeah.
And if you're up a substantial amount, typically the rationale is, oh my God, I'm doing well. Let's just let it ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Bull markets typically end violently. We're seeing it now. We saw a 11-year bull rally, which was the longest in the history of this country, end violently. We saw the same thing happen in 2008-2009. So, I mean, there are a number of additional things that you can do to answer your question, but the first thing that you really must do is have a plan in place and follow that plan to the T. Understand not just your personal benchmark, but you need to understand what macroeconomic indicators are telling one. And for me, it was very clear that, and we've talked about this, that the macro data just did not support a Dow that was sitting at 29,500. And the odd thing is, I had individuals that were clamoring to add to their positions, and you know that was something that I counseled against very, very strenuously, because it's not what you do. You know, as a consumer, when we go out and we shop, we're always looking for bargains. When you're looking to add to a position as an investor, we're wired differently, and we tend to buy things at a premium, which is not what we do as consumers. So, you know, it's a fascinating study in behavioral economics, but that is, in fact, what we do. And those people that purchased at the top end of the market are the ones that, assuming they're still holding on to their positions, are the ones that are now down significantly. I mean, So
I think for the, you know, for the average investor, though, I think they don't know enough to be able to put kind of that kind of a plan together. So they depend on their financial advisor to do it for them. And you know, I don't know if that happens or not for a lot of folks.
Well, you know me, we've spoken in the past, and I'm a very staunch critic of the industry. I think that most folks in the industry are dime a dozen. The incentive, there's really very little fiduciary mindset within the profession. The incentive is to push products, and whether it's commission-based or fee-based, the incentive is to keep people invested, and we tell you to invest long-term.
Right.
So, you know, to that notion, there is truth to that. But there's some very real pain being felt by people that were taught to invest long-term, because you know, a lot of the gains that they had realized are gone. And for a lot of folks, that's not an option. So I have a problem with the industry in the sense that, you know, many of us don't understand or could care less, to be honest, in terms of what's going on within the economy and how to hedge positions and keep the positions from getting smoked. And that's essentially what's happening. So, yes, folks, the average investor is going to rely on their advisor. But I would, as a consumer advocate, one of the things that I try and stress to folks that are looking to invest or are already investing is do your due diligence and check with the Better Business Bureau and the Attorney General, look at the individual's credentials and really shop around and look for someone that is that has a good pulse in terms of the economy, that is not just a set-it-and-forget-it advisor. Look for someone that has a very strategic and tactical mindset, that is making changes in line with macro conditions. I think that's very, very important, and that's playing out right now.
That said, what do you think it would take, Joe, to have this, you know, turn around again? And how long do you think that might take?
Joe, honestly, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you look at recent history, I'm not sure which of the recent pandemics we've had over the last 15 years, but one of them lasted a year. So this one could conceivably last a year. I don't know the extent to which that or this pandemic will have on our economy, on our job market. So it really is unprecedented. I can tell you that the Fed is trying to do its job. The government obviously is trying to do its job. One of the things that I'm worried about, though, is in the Fed having essentially run out of bullets in terms of lowering interest rates. The Fed has a dual mandate, which is price stability and full employment, and both of which it looks to address using either contractionary or expansionary monetary policy, which is just a fancy way of saying controlling interest rates. In 2019, not too many people are aware of the fact that it actually lowered interest rates three times.
Hmm.
This year, it's already lowered interest rates twice.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't, well, I guess technically, we can go into a negative interest rate environment, but that's not something that we've ever done, to my knowledge. It's something that European central banks are doing. So having said that, if the Fed can't lower interest rates any further, what do you do? It has essentially, you know, unloaded its holster, and now it has to look at areas of expansion that it hasn't addressed previously. One comment, having said that, if the Fed is lowering interest rates, it's because it thinks that the economy and the job market need a bump.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a boost. So last year, all of this talk, and this is, you know, this addresses one of the questions that you asked me a minute ago, all of that talk about, you know, the quote-unquote strongest economy ever, now that becomes crystal clear to a lot of individuals, because had that been the case, the Fed would have been raising interest rates to cool the economy off.
Mm.
But instead, it was lowering interest rates to keep it afloat. Growing with the economy growing at 2.1, 2.5%, that's not a strongest economy ever paradigm. It's a decent economy, but it's certainly not something that's worthy of a lofty 29.5 for the Dow.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the, you ask me, how does the average investor look for and hedge their positions? Those are some of the macroeconomic indicators that you ought to be looking for. How strong is the economy? How strong is job growth? What does consumer confidence say? What is manufacturing telling us? And for me, those were very, very telltale signs, certainly not signs that were correlating well with the equity market that I thought was clearly overvalued.
Mm-hmm. The president just the other day said we could have a recession later this year.
Yes.
What does that mean, I guess, first of all?
Well, a recession is historically has been defined as two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth.
Okay.
So GDP stands for gross domestic product. It measures the overall output of goods and services within the economy over a specific period, whether it's quarterly or annually. And that number, our economy has been growing at a, you know, very modest 2.5 percentile. It's not horrible. It's an average number. And again, it doesn't justify the growth that we have been seeing within the equity market.
Mm.
So stepping back, GDP shrank tremendously during the financial crisis of 08 and 09. And, you know, I would argue officially the recession of 08, 09 ran from December of 07 through June of 09.
Mm. Okay.
My argument is that it was actually much longer, but it's a personal and professional opinion based on other metrics that the official agency doesn't take into account.
Hmm.
Regardless, GDP shrank. And so when GDP shrinks, you see a drop in just about every sector of the economy. You see massive layoffs. Well, we saw massive layoffs in 08, 09 to the tune of 8.7 million jobs lost.
Hmm.
To put that in context, the recession of 01, 02 was just over 2 million jobs. So the recession of 08-09, just on a relative basis, was four times worse than the one that we had in 01-02.
Hmm.
The recession that the president and the administration are currently talking about, Mnuchin, Secretary Mnuchin was talking about unemployment numbers nearing 20% or in that range. That would put us on par with the Great Depression.
Wow.
Of the 20s and 30s. I would caution people to throw numbers out like that because it's far too early, and I think if anything, it scares people more than it helps them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that a 20% unemployment is impossible, but I think it's highly unlikely given all of the variables that we're seeing right now, particularly when you put it in context with the financial crisis of 08-09 again. So I think a double-digit inflation number is highly likely, but to say 20%, I think it's early. And one last thing, one metric that helps people guide us in that respect is the initial jobless claims number that came out this morning, which spiked from 211 to 281,000. That's a pretty significant jump. A 33% jump is a significant jump, and that is now a empirical test or confirmation of the selling that we're seeing, right? So if I'm being told that initial jobless claims, which is a proxy for layoffs, in 1 week increased by 33%, that's going to entice me to want to sell more if I'm very bearish.
Right.
So I do think that that number is going to spike. I think that, again, to put it into further context, we were hovering around 700,000 per week at the height of the Great Recession last decade. So for us to be sitting at 211,000, now at 281,000, I think for us to be at 300,000 next week is certainly not not something that I would discount. I think before the dust is completely settled, to see us in the 400,000 to 500,000 range is not certainly beyond the scope of reason. Again, based on the metrics and based on the fear that we're seeing at this point.
Yeah. Been great to talk to you, Joe. I really appreciate
the
opportunity. Please stay in touch. And if you have other feelings or information or advice you'd like to let us know about, please feel free to give a call.
Okay, thank you again, Joe. I very much appreciate you having me on.
Our pleasure. Joe Camargo from Phoenix Financial. Be well, Joe.
You too, Joe. Thank you again.